Shalom, and welcome to another in our ongoing series of podcasts here on Jewish Sacred Aging. I am Richard Address, and I thank you very much for joining us. These podcasts are designed to focus on a variety of issues that are impacting Jewish elders, our families, and our community. We appreciate your comments and suggestions to Rabbi Address at JewishSacredAging.com. And now, with great pleasure, we want to welcome to our podcast microphones Dr. Andrew Gurman, the immediate past president of the American Medical Association. Dr. Gurman, thank you and welcome to Jewish Sacred Aging.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
How are you today? How's life in Western Pennsylvania today?
Life in Western Pennsylvania is wonderful, although I've been on the road so much, I don't spend a lot of time here.
Right. I imagine that given your responsibilities, you have your life has really undergone a lot of changes.
Yes, it has. It's been a tremendous honor to be president, but it's fairly busy.
And just for clarification, how long is how long was your term as president of the AMA?
It's a 1-year term, but it's a 3-year cycle. Ah. So I was president elect for a year, then I was president for a year, and now I'm immediate past president for an additional year. And we tend to use the three presidents as sort of a three-headed monster. I mean, there is so much work to be done that one person can't do it all. So sometimes the president elect will take care of something. Sometimes the immediate past president will. The president is the default go-to guy. But like I said, it's just so busy. I can't be in three places at once.
So these three past years in your cycle, you've had the opportunity, the challenge, and I hope the pleasure of having to negotiate a significant amount of change within the healthcare system and the practice of medicine. Just off the top of your head, but what's your takeaway about your presidency, these 3 years, given all the changes that are, what's the takeaway from this?
Well, it's really been fascinating. And to just give you some context, when I ran for my first AMA position, I was the president of the Pennsylvania Council of the Union for Reform Judaism, which is where you and I first met.
I know it very well.
And at that time, when I won my election as vice speaker of the AMA House of Delegates, I had to make a decision which path I was going to pursue, and I had to give up further work in the URJ at that point. If you had asked me 11 years ago which would have been the path that would have gotten me more involved in tikkun olam, in social justice, in doing good things for good people, I'm not sure that becoming president of the stodgy old AMA would have been the answer that I would have given you. But the fact is that I have been advocating for people, for their healthcare needs, their insurance needs, for access to healthcare. And it's been a tremendous privilege and, quite honestly, a good fit for the last several years. It's been great.
We talk a lot about and the website of Jewish Sacred Aging and basically my full-time work with boomers and our families. But on your perspective and experience, both on the AMA level and in the trenches in practicing medicine, given the nature of the change of a lot of what's happening with the boomers, what do you see as the major health issues for our generation?
Well, the two biggest health issues that are facing all Americans, but certainly our generation, are high blood pressure and diabetes, type 2 diabetes. There are 86 million people in this country who are at risk for developing type 2 diabetes, meaning they have what we call pre-diabetes. And the unfortunate thing is that 90% of them don't even know that they have it. So the AMA has been fairly involved in that. We've created a website called doihaveprediabetes.org, and this is in conjunction with the CDC, the Ad Council, and the American Diabetes Association. Again, doihaveprediabetes.org, and it's a somewhat humorous test that you can take just putting out your risk factors, and it'll tell you whether you're at risk by answering some simple questions. Are you over 40? What's your gender? What's your body mass? So that's That's really important. The other one is high blood pressure. There are 80 million people in this country who have high blood pressure, have a known diagnosis, a known source of medical care, and yet 30 million out of that 80 million are not under good control. So it's important for people to have a good relationship with their physician or their healthcare provider, and to make sure that their blood pressure is under control.
Well, I would have thought that, you would have said heart disease or cancer, but high blood pressure and diabetes, they obviously impact cardiac health.
Well, if you've got high blood pressure and diabetes, you can bet that you're going to develop, if you don't already have, heart disease. So it's all linked together.
So, and how important is it for our generation to just maintain a regular physical? I guess make sure that they see their primary every single year.
It's important for people to have ongoing relationships, not only with their physicians, but also an ongoing consciousness about health. We need to be active. People need to walk. They need to be physically active. If you're in a building and there's an elevator, there's going to be a stairway right next to it. If you're only going up one flight, two flights, consider taking the stairs. Again, you should take the test at doihaveprediabetes.org. If you're a smoker, talk to your family doc about getting rid of your tobacco habit. We also have to look at the foods that we eat. We should limit our intake of processed food, particularly added sodium, which is in a lot of processed food, and that leads into high blood pressure. Alcohol consumption should be moderate. So if you are having more than one or two drinks a day, then you need to think about those lifestyle changes as well.
So there's a lot of stuff being talked about now about diet sodas. Does the AMA have a position on should we just throw away all the Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi that exist?
Actually, the AMA doesn't have a position on that. It turns out that some of the research in brain hormones and brain chemicals that trigger the feeling fullness as opposed to feeling hungry, some of that research says that sweet things tend to make you more hungry. So there are some people who advocate that people switch to drinking water as opposed to diet beverages, but the AMA doesn't have a position on that.
So, again, these 3 years that you've been around the country, I guess your frequent flyer miles have built up, which is great. I mean, it's a unique privilege, and I'm sure an honor, and you're great. I mean, you're very well qualified to do this, and brought, knowing you from the old days, a real sense of passion. But looking back on this and given the current, quote, debate, unquote, of what's happening in Washington, what, from your perspective as sitting from the AMA position, but also from working, as I said before, in the trenches in your office with real life people every single day, what do you think is the best path to reforming the healthcare system? Your opinion?
It's a very, very complex issue, and there are lots of moving parts. So the AMA position has always been that we were okay with the discussion of repeal and replace of Obamacare, but we needed to know what the replacement was going to be. The bottom line is this. We know that people who don't have health insurance live sicker and die younger. Those data are incontrovertibly clear. So what the Affordable Care Act, which many people call Obamacare, what that legislation sought to do was to extend insurance coverage to people who don't have it. And this fits very closely with AMA principles regarding health system reform, that people who don't have health insurance should have it, and that people who have it shouldn't lose it. So the current discussion revolves around a number of things, But our comments have been that people who have insurance that they got under the Affordable Care Act shouldn't lose it. Because, again, people who don't have health insurance live sicker and die younger.
So in all of this, is it true, the statistics that sometimes get played around, that despite the fact that we have immensely wonderful health care, that the United States ranks below other Western countries, developed countries, so to speak, in the delivery of that health care and longevity? Is there a disconnect there somewhere?
Well, there is lots of nuance. No, there I don't know whether this is a disconnect. The data are what the data are. There are a couple of things you need to know. The first is that the United States has diversity and has challenges that none of the other industrialized nations face or don't face to the level that we do. First of all, some of the budget for health expenditures, which is included under our health expenditure, I'm talking about home nursing visits, social service things, other things like that, in other countries are included under a separate social services budget. So you may not be comparing apples to apples when you have these discussions. The United States has different geography, has different ethnicity, has the legacy of slavery, has immigration patterns that are very different than that are faced in other other countries. We have land masses that are far larger than a lot of these countries, so we have the challenges of delivering healthcare in rural areas that don't exist in other countries. So it is very complicated. Having said all that, I think that most people agree that the best medical care to be had in the world is available in the United States. If you're sick or really sick somewhere in the world and you have money, you come to the United States to get cared for. We just got to make it work for all of us here.
And if you were in charge, I'm going to put you in charge. How would you fix the system?
Well, I think that we have to go back to the premises, first of all, that everybody needs to have health insurance. Everybody needs to have access to medical care. And some of that comes under having health insurance. But there also needs to be that insurance needs to be meaningful and usable. If you have somebody who has a relatively low income and you have a $5,000 deductible, then you don't have usable insurance because you're not going to go to the doctor. You're not going to hit that $5,000 threshold. So you're basically paying cash. So we need to go back and look at benefit design. We need to look at financing. We need to look at fixing the things in the Affordable Care Act that admittedly are not good and need to be taken care of.
So there's a difference between access and affordability. I can have access to something, but if I can't afford it, it's meaningless. Is that correct?
I have access to a Lamborghini. I just can't afford it.
Right. Thank you. Right. And where are you going to drive it? in Altoona.
I'll drive it from Altoona to Philadelphia and I'll go to a Phillies game with you.
Listen, let's not speak ill of the dead. but I'm glad you remembered. There's a couple of things that were in the papers very, very recently that just piqued my interest, and I made a note that I had to ask you. Recently, the beginning of July, I think it was the July 8th and 9th edition of the Wall Street Journal, the weekend edition, they had this huge two-page article on physicians using smartphones as diagnostic tools, that evidently now that you can have probes attached to a smartphone that will monitor everything except brain activity, and it can be used to even produce images like MRIs. Is this where we're going? And it's not necessarily bad. I mean, the thrust of that article was this can significantly save a lot of costs of people having unnecessary tests or just having you as a doctor sit in your office and monitor this probe and say, this is good or this is bad. You need to go to see me or need to go to the hospital. Are you seeing this or in what's happening?
Yes, and the possibilities are limitless. Actually, the AMA has been rather involved in this because it's the Wild West out there. There is no regulation. There are thousands and thousands of apps in the health space that are being marketed through the Apple Store or the Android Store. They're all sold as quote-unquote entertainment. There is no regulation. We've been active in getting a couple of the ones that promised and didn't deliver to get those to be recalled. There was one that said it could diagnose whether the mole that you took a picture of was melanoma or not, and it turns out it was woefully inaccurate. There was another one that said that it could tell your blood pressure just by holding your phone in your hand, and it was accurate less than one or two out of 10. So we got the FDA involved in those. But for example, I saw advertised on television this morning, something that for people who have atrial fibrillation, could do an EKG just by putting two thumbs on these sensors, and it would transmit an EKG to your doctor. I have no idea whether it works or not, but the possibility there is tremendous. I know that there are apps where you can get a blood glucose reader, blood sugar level reader, that you use your test strip, it goes to the reader plugs into the smartphone, and that is automatically transmitted to your healthcare team. I believe that some systems like Geisinger and Kaiser are using these, and it's a great way to keep tabs on people. So the possibilities of these are endless. The problem is that, like I said, it's the Wild West out there. There's a lot of stuff being promulgated, and we have to make sure that there is enough oversight so that people aren't buying snake oil.
Right. I would imagine that it's very enticing, that all these promises. So there is so far as the regulation and education, how like, for example, how is the AMA beginning to talk to us, the consumer, and saying, okay, these are things that are legitimate. These are things that are totally hokey.
Well, actually, we have just started a consortium, something called Xcertia, capital Xcertia, I think is the way that it's spelled. And this is a group that has a lot of stakeholders, including industry, healthcare, that is going to start putting out best practices, the gold standard against which some of these things can be measured. Still in the early stages, but that's the direction that we're going with this. The AMA is not going to endorse or quite honestly even evaluate a particular device or application.
So do you think that's up to the FDA?
Well, it's beyond the capabilities that we have. Some of these things may need to be evaluated by the FDA as medical devices.
Wow. I mean, it's pretty interesting. I mean, and the enthusiasm that you're talking about, the possibility in the next generation, certainly in not only my children's, but probably my grandchildren's generation in their lifetime, they'll just be able to put something on and it'll probably be able to monitor their entire system, physical system. I would, from what you're telling, I mean, this is the thrust of this article. That's why I wanted to ask you about it, because it was just so fascinating to talk about. And of course, again, that they were talking about these materials to reduce cost and unnecessary tests, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, sure. I mean, even in my career, when I first started, if you needed to know what the oxygen level in somebody's blood was, you had to draw a blood gas out of the artery in their wrist, which was painful, and then you had to go put it on a machine and analyze it. And in the ensuing years, we now have these little things that you can tape on your finger that monitors the oxygen level just by looking at the red color. And they use these in the operating room all the time. Those of you listening who've been in the hospital or been in the emergency room, you've had one of these things put on your finger. There's no reason that technology can't be translated to a smartphone that has a camera in it. And again, that's just one example. As more and more of these monitors become better and better at non-invasively looking at what's going on inside your body, the process of transferring that or incorporating it into a smartphone is relatively straightforward.
And they're getting smaller, I would imagine, more compact and usable. I guess I would imagine user friendly. It's pretty
exactly
cool.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let me ask you another before we start running out of time here, and I want to be respectful of your time. The not only one of the concerns of our generation is not only the physical health and keeping us healthy and et cetera, but could you talk a little bit about what you are in your experience as the AMA president, president elect and immediate past. About the state and the country of mental health awareness and still the stigmas associated with mental health and the relationship between physical health and mental health.
Sure. Big topic. We are becoming more and more aware throughout medicine of the mind-body relationship. It is very difficult to have a healthy body without having a healthy mind. We are also becoming aware of the hormonal relationships between what goes on in the brain and what goes on in the rest of the body. So it's not just saying that, if you want to be a better tennis player, you got to meditate. We are understanding that if the brain is feeling stressed, that puts out certain chemicals within your bloodstream that raise your blood pressure. So it's all interrelated. As far as the stigma of mental health, that's a huge problem. It's a problem in addiction and opioids, which is a tremendous problem in this country, as I think you and all your listeners understand. The AMA has had a task force that's been working on this, and one of their recommendations is that we have to stop treating addiction as a moral failure and treat it for what it is, which is a brain disease. The example that I frequently use is if you have a guy standing out in front of the Baskin Robbins in your neighborhood, and in one hand, and he weighs 400 pounds, and in one hand he's got the double shake with two scoops of ice cream in it, and on the other hand he's got the ice cream cake with four scoops of ice cream, six toppings, two cherries, and some nuts. It's not good for him. He's probably a diabetic. If not, he's going to be a diabetic when he eats all of his chazarai. And yet you don't yell at him, you don't castigate him, you don't shun him, you don't arrest him. But that is exactly what we do to somebody who is exhibiting the same kind of behavior, but it's opioids rather than ice cream. And the brain chemicals and the brain receptors that fuel those two behaviors are actually very similar. So we have to understand this as a brain disease, as a disease that can be studied, can be treated. The AMA has long advocated for mental health parity and in terms of insurance coverage, and it's one of the things that was in the Affordable Care Act. You're absolutely right. Big problem.
And I know that, from our perspective, Jewishly, the linkage in Jewish tradition, especially as its approach to medicine, is very much a holistic mind, body, spirit approach, which is from our own tradition, and which is fascinating to study and fascinating to teach. But I'm interested in, again, your response. You alluded to the mindfulness stuff. There seems to be a lot more research now being done about the importance of meditation and mindfulness type of activity leading to better physical, emotional, spiritual health. Have you begun to run into this? And has the AMA done anything in this area, studying it, reporting on it, having a task force to look at it, recommending it, anything like that?
Well, the AMA as a policy organization hasn't gotten into the weeds as much as you're describing. But I will tell you that through a technique called functional MRI, there has been a tremendous study about this sort of thing. Functional MRI is an MRI that's done in real time while people are doing certain activities. You can do functional MRIs on dogs and have them sniff things while they're sitting in an MRI scanner, and you can see what parts of their brain will light up. You can do it on people as they are shown images or given tasks or whatever. And it turns out that people who meditate turn on areas of their brain that are involved in thinking, are involved in emotional, I won't say necessarily emotional well-being, but emotional centers, that people who practice meditation have much more activity in these areas. And you can see a direct relationship of people who have just started experimenting with mindfulness as opposed to those who haven't done it at all, as opposed to those who've done it for a year, and as opposed to those who've done it for more than 5 years. So it's really fascinating.
I'm glad nobody has put my brain on a functional MRI while I'm watching a Phillies game. It would be very depressing.
But that's I have to tell your listeners that a memory I have of you is when we were at some retreat or whatever, wrapped in a talus, and everybody else is also wrapped in a talus and wearing kippot. You're wrapped in a talus wearing a Phillies hat.
I no comment. But some people who know me probably can identify that with that very well. Listen, speaking of, you know, Jewish sacred aging and the work that we do, have you come in contact with the AMA any response to this rather interesting and in certain parts of the country growing so-called anti-aging movement? Have you come in contact with it? Have you done anything with the AMA with it? Do they have a position on some of this material?
The AMA doesn't have a specific position on that question, but the AMA does have policy that very clearly states that we believe that any intervention needs to be evidence-based. That if you're going to make a claim, there needs to be evidence, hopefully level one evidence, which is basically blinded, randomized studies, but that there needs to be more than you know, testimonials, that my grandmother had a shot of Remy Martin every night before she went to sleep, and she lived to be 100, therefore you should have a shot of brandy before you go to sleep. You know, it needs to be a little bit more than that.
Right. The for people who want to touch base with a website or something, can you give us a website that people may want to go to do some research or learn more about the activities of the AMA?
Sure, absolutely. The AMA main website is www.ama-assn.org. If you just go to AMA.org, you get the American Marketing Association. So it's AMA-ASSN.org. And there is a link to almost everything that we talked about today on that site. I'll also give you an email if anybody wants to contact me. Be happy to help out. It's Andrew.Gurman. G-U-R-M-A-N is my last name. Andrew.Gurman at ama-assn.org.
Thank you. Thank you very much. In the last thing, if you had just one or two things to tell the baby boom generation and all of us about health, what would it be? What's the one or two key things that you would tell everybody?
The first is that you have to take care of your own wellness. I enumerated some things before about more exercise and diet and lifestyle things. You know, it turns out that we are no longer dealing with communicable diseases, which were the big problems of the 20th century. Most of the things that doctors see now and that are making people sick and killing them are chronic diseases, many of which are related to lifestyle. There's no magic to this. Walk a little more, lose a little weight, pay more attention to to the physical side of things, and the other is to spend more time on the mental side of things. It's important to be happy, and it's important to not neglect the spiritual side of what you do. Find joy in what you do.
Dr. Andrew Gurman, immediate past president of the American Medical Association, thank you very, very much for joining us here on the Jewish Sacred Aging podcast. I wish you continued good luck. Take care. Have a great summer and stay healthy. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. It's been a pleasure to talk to you again.
You take care. Thank you all for listening again to our ongoing series of Jewish Sacred Aging podcasts. We appreciate your time and again remind you that you can contact us at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. All the past podcasts are available archived on our website, www.jewishsacredaging.com. And these programs are recorded through the facilities of Lubetkin Global Media here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey. I'm Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you again on our next podcast. Thank you, and shalom.
I'm going to roll tape.